Good Tuesday afternoon. You're listening to KTOO in Juneau, and this is a Juneau Afternoon. I'm Ken Fix. I'll be your host for today. And on our show, we'll be talking with Maria Yucatel about the upcoming Roaring Twenties Soiree fundraiser for Bartlett Regional Hospital. We'll profile the City and Borough of Juneau City Clerk's job with guest Lori Sicca. We'll be meeting a visiting rabbi, Chava Lee, and we'll learn about employment in the Juneau School District with Ted Bronkenhorst, and he's the Director of Human Resources. These guests, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and some more for Tuesday, September 23rd, 2014. Stay tuned. National Native News is up first.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The United Nations General Assembly adopted an agreement called the Outcome Document Monday that provides measures to implement the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The declaration was adopted in 2007. Monday's move happened during the first ever World Conference on Indigenous Peoples being held in New York City. The outcome document focuses on four priorities: to set up a body to monitor the implementation of the declaration, to establish a permanent status for indigenous governments at the UN, prevent violence against indigenous women, and protect sacred sites. Robert Coulter, executive director of the Indian Law Resource Center, says indigenous people, including from tribes in the U.S., participated in creating the document.
It was a wonderful moment. The hundreds of indigenous participants who were in the General Assembly Hall rose to their feet and applauded, celebrated, and it was a very good moment because of what the indigenous nations and peoples have been able to achieve.
Coulter says details still need to be worked out. The Indigenous Conference wraps up today. Native people are also in New York this week participating in events to address climate change as world leaders meet at the UN for a climate summit. Events this week included a march and lectures. Indigenous activists are voicing concerns about fracking, uranium mining, and protecting natural resources. Tribal leaders are now looking to the Obama administration to take action in the U.S. British Columbia's political leaders recently sat down with First Nations for an all-chiefs meeting. It's the first meeting since the Supreme Court of Canada upheld a BC First Nations right to more than 400,000 acres of land in the province. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
It was the first time ever British Columbia Premier Christy Clark and her cabinet sat down for talks with all 203 of BC's First Nations, and among her first actions was to formally acknowledge Aboriginal title. She could hardly do otherwise in the wake of a high court ruling which expanded and clarified that title.
My position on that hasn't changed. I want to get a negotiated agreement. I intend to get one. And I think as long as we keep our eyes focused on that goal, it will remain within our reach. The minute we take our eyes off that goal, I think it will begin to elude us.
Until now, Clark has shown little inclination to tackle the 150-year-old land question. The unprecedented meeting took more than 2 years to organize, but not nearly as much as what went into winning the case before the country's highest court. Ed John is the Grand Chief of the First Nations Summit.
That's a tremendous amount of resources, tremendous amount of cost, tremendous amount of time of our elders. That's been a part of this long, long and difficult struggle. Now we're at a place where the courts have said, these people are right.
John says First Nations communities are now in a better position to benefit and manage resource development. There was, however, no major breakthrough at the summit. Many elders were hoping for at least a joint statement on title recognition and revenue sharing. Clark did offer some progress on certain economic projects, but she sidestepped the issues of rights and reconciliation. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The U.S. Justice Department announced Monday more than $87 million in grants will address tribal law enforcement and crime prevention efforts. Nine areas are being focused on, including justice systems planning, substance abuse, and youth programs. 169 tribal grants were awarded nationally. The American Indian Alaska Native Tourism Association honored some of the best Indian country destinations during an awards ceremony last week in Louisiana. The 2014 awards went to the Alaska Tourism Corporation, Alaska Native Voices in Huna, and the best tribal destination to Chickasaw Country in Oklahoma. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanofsky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
If you are a Native American, there's one simple thing you can do to help your elders, help young people seeking an education, and help develop Native business. Go out and vote on November 4th. Voting on Election Day makes a difference in Washington, D.C. and at home. Go to nativenews.net for more information. Brought to you by the Carnegie Corporation of New York and Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
3:05 p.m. and you're listening to KTOO in Juneau. My first guest on the show is Maria Yucatel, and she's going to be talking about the fundraiser coming up for Bartlett Regional Hospital this Saturday. Welcome, Maria, to our show. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Ken, for having me here today and to talk about this wonderful event that we're having Saturday, the 27th, at Centennial Hall.
Okay. First off, explain a little bit what the Bartlett Regional Hospital fundraiser will do.
Okay, the Bartlett fundraiser, it's for the Bartlett Foundation. Let me start there. What we do is we're the 501c3 organization that raises funds for the hospital for needed services and equipment that might not otherwise be available because of the funding, where the funding comes through Bartlett. So what we're doing this year is we are fundraising to upgrade critical equipment at CCU. I've come to our attention that the beds at CCU are decades old. So what we're trying to do with the fundraiser is raise enough money to buy at least one more bed for the critical care unit at Bartlett.
Okay, and what has happened over the last few years as far as the regional fundraiser? What have you gotten in the last few years?
Of course, the foundation was established in 1994, and since then we've been fundraising for the hospital. Some projects that have gone on in the past have been, for example, the Bartlett House, the dialysis center, and of course last year, same training for 11 nurses that we funded, and that training was completed in April. And this year, regardless of the gala, the money that we've raised otherwise, we've obtained or funded a climbing wall for pediatric patients along with an entertainment cart. We've also established an activity fund for promote medical studies in Southeast. We have sponsored the All Alaska Pediatric Conference as well, and we've awarded five scholarships. We have a scholarship endowment, the Edelman Fund, and that goes to promote health science studies in Southeast Alaska.
All right, Maria, and what are the goals for this year as far as fundraising goes?
Of course, this year what we're trying to do with this event is raise funds to obtain at least one more bed for CCU. And it's going to be a great evening. It's going to be a Roaring Twenties theme. And we'll have the Thunder Mountain Big Band with great music. So come on over and swing the night away to those good tunes. Also, we are bringing a Master of Ceremonies that specializes in fundraising for nonprofits. And he's coming to help us with the live auction. We're going to have a fund a need component. And this is where we raise funds specifically for the need that we're trying to fulfill this year, which is the beds.
All right, Maria, and tell us a little bit more about the gala itself. It's going to be on Saturday.
Yes, 6 o'clock starts the festivities at Centennial Hall, and what we're having is from 6 to 7:30 is a cocktail hour, but we're also going to be having activities at that time. For example, we're going to have horse races, and these are sponsored by Valley Lumber. And what's going to happen is we're really not bringing horses in. I've had a lot of people
ask. Yeah, I talked to you before we started the show. It's like, come on, we're not having horse races here.
No, but in a way we are.
These run them right down the Eagan Highway here.
These are taped, so we're going to be playing them on the big screens at Centennial Hall. And we haven't watched these races. We don't know what's going on, but they are real races. So for a contribution, people who come to the event will get to bet on a horse and compete, and there will be prizes at the end for the big stakes race, and that's on power tools that have been donated to us by Valley Lumber. So that's going to be a pretty exciting event. Also, we're going to have other types of games. For example, the balloon pops, and we're going to have a split deck for men and women. The men's split deck is sponsored by Western Auto, and the Juneau Mercantile and Armory, and that's going to include, I understand, a very nice halibut rig and a gift certificate for Juneau Mercantile. The women's split deck, for example, is going to be a spa package. So exciting things going on at that time during the cocktail hour.
All right, and then you've got a dessert auction. I see that on the list here.
We do. The dessert auction is going to be sponsored by Gourmet Alaska, and there will be prizes for the top three desserts that at the dessert auction.
All right, and then there's two types of auctions. There's a silent auction and there's a live one.
We do. We'll have the dessert auction, and then there is the silent auction, and we have some very wonderful items for the silent auction, and we'll have a live auction as well. And right before the live auction, we'll have the Fund and Aid auction.
All right, and what else are you going to be doing as far as fundraising goes?
Well, so I have to say, though, that we've gotten a lot of very wonderful donations from the Juneau business community. This is a very generous community, and it's still not too late to donate items to the gala. It is also not too late to become a Fund and Aid sponsor for that portion of the gala where we're going to be raising funds specifically to buy the CCU beds. And it's not too late to buy tickets. We have tickets still available. If you'd like a table or just single tickets, we can get those through the Jack Hearthside Books. Also get them online at brhfoundation.org.
All right. And how much are those tickets?
Tickets are $125 each. You can get a table for $1,000, table of eight. Of course, we have a plated seafood dinner. We'll have...
That's included in the $125.
It's included, yes, absolutely.
All right. And there was one other thing I was going to ask for. That's, you said that you had some contributors already this year. Would you like to...
Say
on the air who they were. Get credit where credit is due.
Of course. Like I said, we have a very, very generous business community. So I've already mentioned Valley Lumber, Western Auto, Juneau Mercantile, Gourmet Alaska, of course, Alaska Airlines, Alaskan Brewery. We have RCCL. We have a wonderful cruise for seven that we're going to be auctioning for in the Caribbean. We have Princess Cruises. And I don't have a list in front of me, which I should have brought, but
that's okay.
It's a wonderful business
you're still
community.
Highlighting quite a few of those, so that's great.
Yes.
All right, and let's remind everybody where and exactly when this is going to take place.
It's Saturday, September 27th, Centennial Hall at 6 p.m., and tickets are available through the Jack, Hearthside Books, Blue Heron Gift Shop at the hospital, and brhfoundation.org.
All right, Maria Yucatel, thank you so much for being our first guest on the show today.
You're welcome.
All right, and as we're going out to the next segment, I've got a song by the Thunder Mountain High School Big Band. This one's called Almost Like Being in Love, and they might even be playing that one coming up on Saturday. Enjoy.
I could swear I was falling. I'd swear I was falling. It's almost like being in love. Keeps ringing for me. starts to peel. I could swear I was falling. I'd swear I was falling. It's almost like being in love. It's almost like being in love.
That sounds like Broadway, doesn't it? Well, it's actually the Thunder Mountain Big Band with Almost Like Being in Love. That's a nice song from 1947, and they will be part of the Bartlett Regional Hospital fundraiser this Saturday, so you may just hear that tune again. All right, my next guests in the studio are from the City and Borough of Juneau Elections and City Clerk Department. It's Lori Sika and Beth McEwen. Welcome both of you to the studio and our show today.
Thanks, Ken.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, now, before we talk about elections, because that's coming up, and that's a big chunk of what's going to go on here, what are the city clerk department's duties? and you can just go down the list. What do you normally do on a day?
Sure. Other duties as assigned is kind of
right.
Like the primary thing that we go to a lot of meetings. We are responsible for tracking public notice in the community of the assembly's activities and their subcommittees, and Beth is responsible for over 35 community committees that are appointed by the assembly.
We have wonderful volunteers within this community that step up and serve on our boards and commissions, and that's a large part of my job is coordinating those activities and appointments and being able to make the work of the city happen without a lot of money, because we do have a lot of volunteer work going on in the boards.
We have we administer appeals to the assembly. When people aren't happy with a decision, they can appeal it, and so that's a lot of paperwork shuffling and minding deadlines, just exciting stuff like that.
Okay. I noticed something on here on the webpage about annexations. Most mm-hmm. everything's in the borough of Juneau. How far out have we annexed as far as properties and locations?
Well, the city boundaries go to Eldred Rock on the north end, and they go down to Taku Inlet on the south. And there's a piece of Admiralty Island, the Mansfield Peninsula, that's in the borough. Of course, Douglas Island and the mainland of Juneau and the ice field. So it's pretty large.
But nobody living in the ice field that we know of.
Not on a
voter
basis.
Kind of hard to get taxes out of them.
No voters up there.
All right. Okay, and it also says that you're responsible for municipal code and calendars. Let's talk a little bit about that.
It kind of goes along with what Lori was talking about earlier with the public notice. All of our meetings are open to the public, and we have to maintain the calendar, and we do the advertising for all those public notices. The main portion of that goes out through the website. We also maintain the Channel 7 TV scanner channel where we notice all of our public meetings. And I'll hand the other one off to Lori.
What was the other one? I'm losing track. We do records management for the city, so we do minutes of meetings and make sure that all minutes from groups are turned in to our office and then filed in the vault and made available to the public. Public Records Act, Open Meetings Act.
All right, and mm-hmm. you also said that you had some responsibility for tax review. Is that a little bit involved in what you guys do?
No, that's fortunately the finance department, and we leave those details to them.
Okay, and also we're going to get into the elections part of this, so let's talk about voting and what comes up with elections and how your department interacts with the election process.
Well, we are the election officials for this city election, and we have a city election every year. The state has an election every 2 years, and we get to have all the fun every year. We have area-wide voting, which is the main difference for our city election than for the state election, and a lot of times that's the one thing that confuses people the most, is that they'll ask, well, which assembly member race can I vote for? You can vote for everything on the ballot, and every ballot is the same in Juneau. There's only one ballot. And so if you live in the District 2, you can vote for the District 1 candidate. The candidate themselves have to be a resident of the district they're running for.
All right. And the voting process itself, you know, I realize a lot of the areas in here are not easily accessible for the entire borough to get in to vote on election day. So let's talk about absentee balloting. What's the procedure that people would have to follow for that?
Well, we have the absentee, we have two stations for absentee voting 2 weeks prior to the election. One is at City Hall, the other is at the Minnan Hall Mall. And the one at City Hall is open Monday through Friday from 8 to 4:30 p.m. And then the one at the Minnan Hall Mall station is actually open also on the weekend. So they're open Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. But they're also open on Saturday and Sunday from noon until 4. And so for 2 weeks prior to the election, that's the absentee in person and what we also call early voting. We also have absentee by mail. We have absentee by fax. And we also have, for those persons who can't make it to the poll due to age or infirmity and just can't make it physically to the poll, we have special needs voting, which can be done either by a representative from our office or you as a family member or friend can go to one of the polling stations, get what's called a special needs personal representative ballot, take it to the individual voter, sign out for it on behalf of that voter that you're going to witness their signature, that they voted their ballot freely and not under any duress and that they couldn't make it to the poll. Then you turn it back into the polling place by the close of polls on election day.
Okay, let's talk a little bit more about the early voting process. I mean, some states, they have what's called the Motor Voter Registration Act, where people can just bring their driver's license in and they can, you know, they can vote right then. Do we have that, or do people have to actually show up with their card to vote?
Well, we request that every voter bring an ID. It doesn't have to be a photo ID at this point. It's a voter card is sufficient, or a driver's license, or other state-issued ID, military ID. And if that person, if we can find the person on the voting register at the absentee station or at the poll, then they can vote what's called an early ballot. It's actually just a little bit less complicated absentee ballot because we don't actually run the ballots all through the machines before the election. Every ballot that's cast in the absentee station is held for review by our absentee and question review board. And then after the election and the poll, we get the returns from the polls on election night. Then our review board takes a look at all the absentee and all the question ballots that were cast in the polls and makes sure that everybody that showed up and voted early, absentee, or any other method other than at the poll itself is a voter on our register and didn't vote twice. So we're always checking to make sure that people didn't vote an absentee ballot and then go to the poll because sometimes people forget. And you know, it's a very paper-intensive process that we use, but it's worked in every election.
Oh, yeah.
Found one or two people that, oh, I forgot I went to the absentee station and voted, and then they went to the poll. But it's never been anything we found that was intentional.
Well, I think that the early voting is it's very good because some people may not necessarily be able to get to the polls on election day. But in a lot of cases, especially with the Minnan Hall Mall location, they can get out there and get their votes and get that in early. So when does early voting actually start?
Started.
Oh, so we're already
yeah,
in it. Okay.
Yeah, we started yesterday.
Yeah.
Oh, it started yesterday. Okay,
we started with a bang. We had over 100 voters yesterday, so that was pretty exciting.
Okay.
Yeah,
between our two polling stations and we've already mailed out our absentee by mail, which is over 60 ballots. So we're off to a good start, I think, for this election.
Okay. Do you think that these vehicles for early voting and absentee balloting is, you know, doing a lot to help the election process? Do we get a lot more people that participate because of those?
You know, I think every year it just depends. The turnout is really dependent on what's on the ballot itself. But
right.
I think people really appreciate all the opportunities they have to vote in many different ways, and it just is convenience for the voter, you know. We still, you know, encourage people to show up at their poll on Election Day because we go to a lot of effort. We have 13 precincts, and we have workers at all of those precincts waiting to see voters. And, you know, we'd love to say, oh, we ran out of ballots. But,
yeah.
You know, we'll see.
Well, yeah, we're not getting into politics as who's running for what. You know, I just kind of wanted to go through the
sure.
process
uh-huh.
and just let everybody know that I thought mm-hmm. the early voting was coming up. I didn't realize it actually started. Okay, great.
Yeah, yeah.
So anybody can get out there, City Hall or Mendenhall Mall locations, and do their early voting. Mendenhall Mall locations are open on the weekend, right?
Yes,
they are.
Okay.
And one of the things I would like to highlight this year that we're doing a little bit different is that we've actually had a candidate statement placed on the candidate webpage on our Juno.org homepage. You can get to it, follow the election news, and you can actually find out a little bit more about each of the candidates before you show up to the polls. And it's another way that we've increased some voter education.
Okay, other than seeing the ads on TV, which, you know, it always goes back and forth with mudslinging and whatnot. But so you're basically putting out a lot of factual information on the website for people to go to.
We have a lot of information about how to vote, the process, and then this year, like I said, the candidate statements are there. We have nothing to do with what's in the statements. We've just published them online for another opportunity for voters to be able to find out more about who's running.
All right. And is there anything else that we missed as far as what the city clerk department does?
Oh, well.
All right. You can,
how long
you
do we
tell
have?
Me anything. Okay. Just, you know, just run down anything else that we missed,
well,
some of the things that you do.
Try to keep the candy jar stocked so that people are happy when they come to see us.
It's like the doctor's office. All right. Okay. And, is there any other functions that you do on a regular basis that people wouldn't expect that you do?
We do review the liquor licenses for every liquor license holder within the city and borough of Juneau, and we facilitate that review by various different departmental staff and then take those recommendations to the Assembly for action. So while a lot of people don't know that that is one of our functions, if people are looking to buy a liquor license or transfer a liquor license, we're kind of the go-to for the information on that.
One of the other duties is assigned as public information officer when we have an emergency, so we get to go out to the police station and become part of the emergency operations center and try to get the news out to the media and to people in general about what's going on.
Okay, does that mean then if we have any kind of disaster preparedness drills, you get pulled in on that as well?
Yep.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
It's always an exciting time. The last time we were involved with that was that recent flooding in the Mendenhall Lake and River.
That was an actual disaster. That wasn't just a fake thing. All right. But what kind of disasters do you get involved in that we prepare for? Is it like avalanche and earthquake?
We've done avalanche preparations. We've done preparation for issues with cruise ships, you know, emergencies on the cruise ships. And, of course, then the airport does their annual preparedness.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you get pulled in on that, too?
Sometimes. Yeah.
Sometimes.
They have their own world out there.
All right. Well, Lori Sika and Beth McEwen from the City Clerk's Office, thank you very much for being our guests on the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 23rd of September, 2014. It's the birthday of Bruce Springsteen, born Long Branch, New Jersey, 1949, who, at the age of 7, saw Elvis Presley on the Ed Sullivan Show and turned to his mother and said, "I want to be just like that." When he was in high school, he joined a local band called the Castiles. They played in trailer parks and Elks Lodges and birthday parties. He played with various bands, writing his own songs, playing for anything that would hire them in the towns along the Jersey Shore. Got a contract with Columbia, recorded a couple albums. Sales were bad. They were talking about terminating him. And so he spent 14 months working on a new album, 6 months on one song, Born to Run. That album came out in August 1975, and Bruce Springsteen became an overnight sensation. In the early years, he wrote and sang songs about teenage life on the streets of New Jersey, about cars and girls, and working at dead-end jobs. After Born to Run, he was more interested in folk music, country music, Hank Williams. He said, "In country music, I found the adult blues, the working men's and women's stories I'd be searching for." In his late 20s, he read a biography of Woody Guthrie, and his music became more political. He recorded a solo acoustic album, Nebraska, about people's lives who were slipping through the cracks. He considered it his most personal record, and then his next album, Born in the USA, became one of the best-selling albums of all time. Bruce Springsteen, who said, "I tend to be a subscriber to the idea that you have everything you need by the time you're 12 years old to do interesting writing for most of the rest of your life." It was on this day, 1806, Lewis and Clark, Meriwether Lewis, William Clark, returned from their westward expedition after more than 2 years and 8,000 miles, came up the Mississippi River into St. Louis, and the whole town crowded along the shore to welcome them with gunfire and ringing bells. It's the birthday of Ray Charles, born Albany, Georgia, 1930. Ray Charles, who said, "I just want to make my mark, leave something musically good behind. If it's a big record, that's the frosting on the cake, but music is the main meal." And it was on this day, 1641, a ship full of Spanish gold went down about 40 miles off the coast of Cornwall, England, the Merchant Royal, with 100,000 pounds of gold on it, nearly $1 billion in today's currency, a ship that treasure hunters have been looking for ever since. In 2007, a company said they had recovered more than $500 million in coins from a shipwreck they thought was the Merchant Royal, but it's believed the coins came from another ship instead. Here's a poem for today by Lewis Simpson, entitled Summer Morning. There are whole blocks in New York where no one lives, a district of small factories, and there's a hotel. One morning, when I was there with a girl, we saw in the window opposite men and women working at their machines. Now and then, one looked up. Toys, hardware, whatever they made, it's been worn out. I'm 15 years older myself, bad years and good. So I have spoiled my chances. For what? Sheer laziness, the thrill of an assignation, my life that I hold in secret. Summer Morning by Lewis Simpson, from his collected poems published by Paragon House and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, produced by Joy Biles, with assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Every time I sing this song, I hope it's the last time. So says the poet in the opening moments of Perseverance Theater's An Iliad. This grand tale of the Trojan War comes roaring to life in a contemporary new telling and becomes breathtakingly relevant. Boston Christopher takes on the role of the poet who, along with live music by Lucy Peckham, unleashes this thrilling tale about our unshakable attraction to violence. More information and tickets, visit ptalaska.org or call 463-TIXS.
An Iliad closes this Sunday, September 28th.
And it's 3:35 p.m. You're listening to KTOO in Juneau. My next guest is Rabbi Hava Lee, and it's great to have her on the show with us today. Hi, Hava. How are you?
I'm well, but, you know, I'm not a rabbi, remember? I'm not even close to being the rabbi, but I am the congregational president for our local synagogue, Sukkot Shalom. And the rabbi, Rabbi Ailo, and her husband Enrico, flew in last night directly from Rome, and she is taking a much-needed break today to try and catch up to our time zone. So,
all right, Hava, and let's talk about the services that you have available. And
okay, so coming up are the biggest Jewish holidays of the year, starting with Rosh Hashanah, which is essentially translated to New Year, and ending 10 days later with Yom Kippur, which is the biggest holiday in the Jewish calendar. And every year we have a rabbi who has come to Juneau to lead us through these 10 days, which we refer to as the High Holy Days. And this year, we are very fortunate to have Rabbi Ailo with us. She's going to be leading all the services. Her husband, Enrico, and she live in Sarastrada, Italy. And she has congregation near Tami del Sud there, and this is the first active synagogue in Calabria since the Inquisition. And she's the only female rabbi in all of Italy. So all in all, that should be really interesting, and we are really grateful to have her here. So tomorrow, Rosh Hashanah begins in the evening, Erev Rosh Hashanah, which translates to New Year's Eve. And we will be having services beginning at 7 o'clock. They will be held at the synagogue, which is at 211 Cordova Street. And, you know, prior to the services in Jewish homes all around the world, people will be having dinner with family and friends and eating traditional foods and getting ready to start this 10 days of introspection and reflection.
All right, Hava, and what other holidays are coming up in the Jewish calendar?
So tomorrow starts the High Holy Days, and it begins, like I said, at 7 o'clock are the first mm-hmm. services. Then the next morning, Thursday, are the day Rosh Hashanah services. They begin at 10 o'clock. At 3:45, there is a family service, and that's traditionally just a service that the rabbi picks a specific topic, usually around this holiday, and they're a shorter service. And then at 5 o'clock, we have what's called Tashlik. So in the 40-some years I've lived in Juneau, the community has met at Gold Creek, and the Tashlik service is symbolic of recognizing, acknowledging, saying out loud, even if it's to yourself, your sins and transgressions of the past year, and then tossing those sins away into the running water. So the process of Rosh Hashanah and these 10 days of reflection are that, you know, you have to really look at the last year. You have to recognize what you've done and what you've been a part of. And you have to make plans for the coming year. And those plans need to be that you will do better and be better. And so this is the first, this symbolic tossing out into the running water is the first step on that acknowledgement. And then on Saturday the 27th, we have a Havdalah service. So Saturday, this will be the day after, at the end of our Sabbath, which begins on Friday night. And the Havdalah service is just a way to recognize that this has been a sacred time and that now we're going back into our more secular days, and it gets us started on the new week. And then on the 3rd of October begins Yom Kippur, and that service begins at 7 o'clock at night. It begins with what is called the Kol Nidre service. It's very solemn. There is people take this very seriously, and at the end of service begins a 24-hour fasting period. So, you know, if you know Jewish holidays, they pretty much always revolve around food. So this one, not revolving around food and requiring fasting, it's a difficult day to get through. And the fasting makes it very uncomfortable, and that's the purpose of it, is that, you know, if you're going to repent, you need a little discomfort along with it. So Saturday morning, then we meet again at 10 o'clock. This is a full day of services beginning at 10 o'clock. There's an afternoon service. There's a Yisker service. There's a Nila service. And then after, usually around 7 o'clock when people are getting really cranky, then we have a community, what we call break the fast, and everybody then can eat. So they will have eaten for the first time in 24 hours. And one of the last things that we do on Yom Kippur is we have a special service recognizing and acknowledging the people that have passed away during the past year. And so, of course, that's, you know, it's very heartrending and emotional. But it's to acknowledge what they've meant in our life and that they're going on with us. So those are the services coming up. And then we move ahead to the 10th of October, and we have a service called Sukkot. And if you lived somewhere, possibly, and we might be able to pull it off in Juneau this year, but traditionally you build a structure outside, and it's a very loosely built structure with a roof that you can see through so that you can see the stars. And it's a harvest and a thank you for the harvest festival. And so we will be doing that again this year and again at the synagogue.
All right, Hava. And I wanted to ask a little bit because, you know, when you're growing up, I had Jewish friends, and I knew about Yom Kippur, but the other one that comes up is Hanukkah.
Yeah.
Okay. Importance of that and symbology, is that a fairly big event?
Hanukkah is
Jewish?
Really, Hanukkah gains in its popularity the more the Jewish community is integrated, and it lessens in its importance the more that the community is just Jewish. It's not a big holiday. It's not an important holiday, except in that you know, it's celebrated with joy and good wishes for everyone. But mostly the importance of Hanukkah in the United States revolves around just the integration of individuals who are Jewish individuals into a broader community. And, you know, Christmas tends to fall around the same time as Hanukkah, so it has, you know, taken on some of some more importance. And I think mostly for kids, you know, when they meet after the school break, after the holiday break, and the kids are all talking about what they got for Christmas and what they did for Christmas, it, you know, and the Jewish kids always felt left out. So I think that that's kind of where that came from.
All right. Well, Havali, thank you very much for being our guests on the show today.
Thank you, and I hope everybody can join us for Rosh Hashanah services tomorrow, beginning at 7 o'clock.
This is Bird Note. I used to gillnet salmon in Alaska, writes Bird Note listener Misha Noonan. At the fall equinox, we'd often get stuck at the far east end of the Copper River Delta, waiting out the storms. Once, the storms were so unrelenting that not only were fishermen unable to return to Cordova, but sandhill cranes were unable to proceed with their southeast migration. Every morning, a test flight of scouts would lift off and attempt to get around a nearby cape. The birds aloft chattered to the birds in the slough, the birds in the slough answering excitedly, but it wouldn't be long before the tone changed, in my opinion, from one of excitement to one of disappointment as the scouts had to turn back. The tenth morning broke calm and clear. The scouts lifted off at first light. Everyone was awake. Cranes, fishermen, ducks, geese, everyone. The scouts called loudly and excitedly to the flock on the ground. You could imagine what they might have been reporting. 1,000 feet, clear and calm. 2,000 feet, visibility unlimited. 3,000 feet, we're around Kayak Island and out of here. Soon, 10,000 sandhill cranes filled the sky. In 20 minutes, they were gone. Silence. The rally of the sandhill cranes was over for another year. Share your story at birdnote.org.
Hi, this is Rob Cohen, and I'm excited to be kicking off 360 North's concert series, Alaska Originals, with the Rob Cohen Jazz Group. Join me, Doug Bridges on sax, Alexi Painter on bass, and Clay Good on drums for a show we're calling Contrafaction. Music, conversation, and more at 360 in the KTOO building. Thursday, September 25th. Doors open at 6:30 and cameras roll at 7 sharp. Tickets at krnn.org.
3:47 p.m. You're listening to KTOO in Juneau. This is a Juneau afternoon. And my next guest is Ted Van Bronckhorst. He's the Juneau School District Director of Human Resources, and he's going to be talking about employment within the school district and a need for quality substitute teachers in the classrooms. Ted, it's nice to have you on the show with us.
Great. Thanks, Ken. Thanks for inviting me.
You're welcome. Okay, so let's talk about employment in the school district in the current climate of budget cuts and whatnot. How's it looking for somebody that wants to get a job?
Well, for someone who wants to get a job, I think there's still good employment opportunities. For people who are interested in being a teacher or administrator, there's no openings right now, at least full-time positions. So those would come open in the springtime when we get our resignations and retirements. As far as support service, those positions come open at any time during the year. So all of our positions are posted on the JSD website. So that's jsd.org.
All right. And how many teachers do we have on board right now within the school district?
There are approximately 400 teachers in the school district.
All right. And what specific requirements would people need in order to become a substitute teacher? Because it looks like that's what you're looking for right now.
Right now, yes, there is a need for substitutes. We have had a number of people sign up recently, but we're still looking for We're looking for good quality people. We're looking for people who have an interest in children and helping them in the classroom. We're looking for people who are willing to substitute either as a classroom teacher or as a paraeducator, someone to assist the teacher in the classroom. And it's easy to get to be a substitute teacher. You can find the application and information right on the JSD website. Again, there's a brand new section that was just posted today, I think, that allows people to go on, fill out the application, and learn about being a substitute.
Okay, what kind of requirements would you be looking for?
Well, other than a good quality person, as far as background, a minimum is a high school diploma. And then beyond that, if you have a degree or if you have a teaching certificate, then your pay would be increased.
All right. And what kind of salary are we talking for substitutes? Obviously, this is paid by the hour since you're subbing in only when needed and not necessarily on a more or less recurring basis, right?
Right. Yeah, you can work as much as you want. You can work almost every day if you choose or as little as you like. The range is from about $11 an hour up to about $17 an hour, depending upon your experience. There is a $2 an hour bump after you've worked 10 days with the district. So that's an added incentive to join and hopefully make it something that would work for you.
Okay, and you said that basic requirements would be a high school diploma and or a teacher's certificate would be extremely helpful. What other sort of background are you looking for? Like anybody that has, you know, a specific interest or background in certain fields, would they be, you know, like if you got a background in history or, like, say, aviation, are there fits for those kind of people into the substitute program or not?
Well, certainly, we're looking for people who have a nice, strong background, a varied background, and certainly we're looking for people who can bring those bits of expertise or bits of interest into the classroom to help the children. That would be wonderful. But really, we're looking for people who have an interest and people who enjoy working with children and want to help them be successful.
Okay, and are there certain grades that have more of a need for substitutes than others? Like, are we looking at the you know, elementary school level, or are we looking more for junior high and high school level?
Yeah,
you're looking at me like, yeah, we need everything.
I think we're looking for substitutes across the board. Yeah, if somebody has an interest in only working in mathematics, say, or they have an interest in working with younger children in elementary, we would have on any given day we would have a position that would fit those folks.
Okay. And other than just kind of living and breathing requirements, what would you be looking for the most? I mean, do we have a need for specialties in sciences, or are we looking for people that have a good background in history? What kind of topics are we looking for, and what would you need to do to fill in? Like, I imagine that you get a call, like the night before or something, hey, we need you to sub in tomorrow, and your topic is X. Is that how it would work, or?
Yes, I think it's probably more general than that. I think you would get a call that there would be a substitute position available at the high school level in history, and then you would have the option to accept or not. Obviously, in any of the classrooms, there are lesson plans that are prepared by the teacher or by the principal in the case of an emergency absence that would guide you in your day with the children. So you wouldn't be on your own in there without a plan and without support. You'd also, if you were working in an elementary classroom, you would have the aides who are usually there working with the students as well. So there's there would be support for you.
So you're not going it alone, basically.
Exactly. You're not going it alone, and we don't demand that someone has strong content knowledge to be a substitute. You just have to be a good quality person, able to help children get through the day and do a good job.
Okay, great. All right, well, Ted Van Bronckhorst from the Juneau School District, thank you very much for being our guest on the show today.
Thank you very much, Ken.
Morning and out to school. The teacher is teaching the golden rule. American history and practical math. You study them hard, hoping to pass. Working your fingers right down to the bone. The guy behind you won't leave you alone.
are cooking the lunchroom ready to sell. You're lucky if you can find a seat. You're fortunate if you have time to eat. Back in the classroom, open your book. See, but the teacher don't know how mean she looks. Soon as 3 o'clock rolls around, you finally lay your burden down. Close up your books, get out of your seat. Down the halls and into the street. Up to the corner and round the bend. You go in, drop the coin right into the slot. You gotta hear something that's really hot. With the one you love, you're making romance. All day long you've been wanting to dance. Feeling the music from head to toe. Into the slot. You gotta hear something that's really hot. With the one you love, you're making romance. All day long you've been wanting to dance. Feeling the music from head to toe. Round and round and round you go. Hail, hail, rock and roll. Deliver me from the days of old. Drums loud and bold. Rock, rock, rock and roll. Feeling his hair, body and soul.
The City and Borough of Juneau will be conducting a prescription pill and drug disposal program on Saturday, September 27th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Nugget Mall. Please bring your unused, unwanted, or expired medications to the collection site for deposit in the secure collection box. Please note that intravenous solutions, injectable syringes, and medical waste will not be accepted. More information on the program at juneau.org or 780-6009.
That's a little bit of Big Star's September Girls, and we're still in September for a few more days yet. And before that, we heard School Days from Chuck Berry. Tonight's forecast for Juneau, we're calling for partly cloudy skies with some patchy fog late. Well, I hope it's patchy and not as bad as it was this morning. Lows around 45 with northwest winds at 10 miles an hour, becoming light and variable. Tomorrow's forecast, mostly cloudy with some patchy fog in the morning with highs around 57. Southeast winds at 10 to 15 miles an hour, shifting to the northeast in the afternoon. And tomorrow night, cloudy with a chance of rain and lows around 44. This is KTOO in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on the following translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay areas, tune to K276 AF 103.1. Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens in on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear us on K210 AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Digital Cable Channel 871. KRNN can be heard at 872. KXLL is 873. All Things Considered is coming up, and I'll see you next Tuesday.